So my job here is to make Mark look good. And the way I can make Mark look good is by helping him make good on his promise. And so what I'm going to do next is I'm going to go over a timeline of what needs to happen before introduction and after introduction for Mark to make good on his promise. I'm going to give you the current status of Republicans, the current status of Democrats, and some things that you should be aware of so that you're not surprised tomorrow or on Tuesday. So number one, timeline. Before introduction, the number one thing that needs to happen is we needed to get a Republican to submit our bill text language to Legislative Council. Legislative Council are the lawyers who write all bills. It's the same lawyers because they need to make sure that all bills are consistent with all bills which have already been passed. It needs to be a Republican because we actually tried and got some Democrats to say yes last year to do this. But I heard from multiple Republican offices, we would never touch that. If it has Democratic fingerprints on it, a Republican couldn't touch that. And so what I realized is we'd just be asking Democrats to spin their wheels if we were gonna have to get a Republican to do it anyway. So we are only looking for Republicans to submit our bill text to Legislative Council. Number two thing we need to do before introduction, we need to get a Congressional Budget Office or Joint Committee on Taxation score, that's CBO or JCT. What is a score? A score refers very specifically to the effect a policy would have on the federal budget or the deficit over 10 years. Why these two organizations? Because they're both arms of Congress. Members of Congress set their rules. They're very comfortable with them. They know what's going to be coming out of them. They know how to deal with it. We also need a Republican to submit it to the JCT or the CBO. And they're not going to submit a bill before they get this, because if they submit it afterwards and the score is bad, they're going to look really, really bad. And there are a lot of people who are going to remind them of that. The number three thing we need to do is we need to pack the House Working Group, the Senate Working Group, Gibson Resolution, and the Climate Solutions Caucus. The reason why is what I told you earlier about that study looking at climate opinions in the United States from 2002 to 2010. I think we can sometimes forget that our policy is a really, really big deal. It is a match for the scale of the problem, and the billions of dollars that it would raise in year one, that's billions of dollars, and that's a lot of money, and that scares people. And if we're going to do that, we need as much of the public behind us as we possibly can. Getting Republicans on those groups is going to help us do that. Number four, I think we're going to need at least 10 Republicans to get on board before submission in the House, and hopefully more. In the Senate, I'd say four or five. What we're doing for Republicans is we need to make sure that we're mitigating their risk. Just like they are mitigating their risk when they get that CBO or JCT score before they submit, getting a team of co-sponsors before they submit, that is spreading their risk. If they go down, they go down together. So I just think that we're going to need to do that to be successful. Number five, we need to line up a whole heck of a lot of endorsers. We need to line up businesses, industry groups, chambers of commerce, newspapers, mayors, scientists, faith leaders, and especially in the districts of Republican co-sponsors, especially in the districts of Republicans we hope will be co-sponsors. Why is this? Again, it's about risk mitigation. They need to get from here to there. All those people who I just mentioned, those are people who have been behind Republicans in the past. They know they can win with them when they're behind them. If we get them on one of our endorsements, they know they're with them if they introduce this bill. By getting their endorsements, we're giving Republicans certainty that the coalition that got them elected before isn't going to abandon them because of this bold move they're taking. If we can give them that certainty, that is a huge risk mitigation. Sixth thing we need to do before submission is we need to reconcile ourselves to what's going on in Washington State and address it. For those of you who don't know what's going on in Washington State, a group called Carbon Washington put together a great bill based on the British Columbia carbon tax, got it on the ballot, and they've started a civil war on the left. It's really ugly, and we want to avoid that. A civil war on the left of the political spectrum. Carbon Washington is being attacked as introducing a policy that will harm the poor. That's not true, but what could we do to address that? Well, we could come out with a study exactly like the Household Impact Study, which I think goes a long way to addressing that, and we could share that with our friends on the left who really, I think, would be there with us when this is introduced if they understood what the policy is. But regardless, we need to reconcile ourselves to that and start doing some outreach, or continue doing some outreach in most cases, to make sure they're on board. That gets us to introduction. After introduction, as I said, this is a really big policy. When this gets introduced, it's going to be earth-shattering. It's going to be in the New York Times, it's going to be on CNN, it's going to be on Fox News, it's going to be international news, and there's going to be a lot of media. There's going to be a lot of positive media, there's going to be a lot of negative media, but you know what we've been doing for the past 8 years? We've been writing letters to the editor. We've been writing op-eds. We've been meeting with editorial boards. We've been getting on TV. We've been getting on the radio. We've been getting articles published. We've been getting online. That's what we need to keep doing. We have been flexing those muscles, building those muscles, and when this is introduced, we're going to have to flex those like we've never flexed them before. And what we're trying to do is we're trying to make sure that the positive media way outweighs the negative media. And then once it's generated, we're going to have to make sure that that gets to Republican members of Congress who are supporting this, so they know CCL has your back. If you take a step and you take a bold step on the climate, we're going to have your back. We're going to generate good media for you. And that's also important because it's going to help us address number three, which is get more co-sponsors. 10 is not going to cut it for passage. It'll get you introduction. It's not going to get you passage. If we get that media, then those who introduce it have a great story to tell their colleagues. You should be a co-sponsor. If you are a co-sponsor, Citizens Climate Lobby will have a ton of media in your district, and they'll make sure that you have it so you can repeat that to your constituents. That's a great message from Republicans to bring to their colleagues. They can sell that. How many co-sponsors are we going to get? Are we going to need to get? I would say at least 42. That's a symbolic number. That's the number of members on the Freedom Caucus. In my analysis, members of the Freedom Caucus are no less likely than any other Republican to like our policy. So I'm not saying Freedom Caucus members won't like our policy, but they are known for gumming up the works of Congress. And so if you have more Republicans than the Freedom Caucus, then symbolically, you can beat what has been a roadblock. It's very possible we may need over 100 co-sponsors. Based on the Scalise Amendment passing, the leadership approved that. And so we have to convince the leadership. So we're gonna have to get a lot of co-sponsors. We're gonna need to get more endorsers, always more endorsers. And once it's introduced, we can start targeting more national, international groups, the bigger fish. Because once this is submitted and you have this earth-shattering event, they're gonna have to respond to it. So I think that we can hook them in. We're gonna have to get hearings. As I mentioned, that's why there's so many asks, supporting asks that have to deal with hearings. And number six, we're going to have to get it through committee. As I mentioned, the Finance Committee and the Ways and Means Committee are the main committees. So what I want you to share with office is that we have no Republican co-sponsors for our bill, but we have serious Republican interest. Even taking it down that notch, every single office, just about every single office is going to ask you which Republicans. And I've included a response for you in the action logic. That was that green sheet. So read through that. There's a ready-made response for you to do. Scalise, don't be afraid of Scalise. This was the Republican Party throwing a political marshmallow at us. I mean, it's a non-binding resolution, which they've already voted on. So 90% of Republicans were already on board with it. And but you know, for me, what that is the famous saying is, first they ignore you, then they laugh at you, then they fight you, and then you win. They're fighting us with marshmallows. So it's a useful teaching opportunity. Go for it. Ellie gave you a great training right there. For the House Working Group, the Senate Working Group, the Climate Solutions Caucus 424, I just want to take a moment to remind you that last year on the supporting asks, one of our highest value asks was speak with your Republican colleagues in a safe space and discuss solutions to climate change. Now we've got four groups, which we've mentioned multiple times tonight, which are doing exactly that. They have said yes to one of our highest value asks from last year. That is progress, people. That is fantastic. Current status of Democrats, a great many would vote for our proposal. After last year's lobby day, 83 were ranked as D, 89 were ranked as C. But I would have to say for a great many, this still would not be their preferred solution. But if Republicans introduce it, we got them. It's going to be very hard for them not to back that. But nonetheless, for years, Democrats have been our worst meetings. People come out of meetings with Democrats expecting to have a good time, and they come out just totally drained. So that's because they've been fighting really hard and not getting anywhere. And I want to share with you some advice that I got from a volunteer who has a really good relationship with their Democratic office. And the advice is, number one, bring relentless optimism. In DC, a shortcut to sounding smart is to be cynical and to say nothing's going to happen, because it's a smart bet. It makes you sound smart. Being optimistic takes courage in this town. And when you're optimistic, it gives them optimism. And I think that that's something that they really need. Number two, always acknowledge everything they brought up for your group to do, even if you haven't been able to do anything about it. So we want to move to a partnership. We want to identify endorsers in their district who matter for conservatives. That is a partnership. If you're going to build a partnership, you need to show your partner that you hear them, you listen to them, you're working on their opinions, which you value. So look through the notes. If they make any recommendations, even if your group hasn't had a chance to do anything, say, last time we met with you, you said this. We haven't had a chance to address it. We're still working on it. It's a good suggestion. With everything they suggest, as much as you can. Be prepared. Number one, there may be many Democrats who are angry at the Graham Amendment, who are angry at all these other working groups. They're going to say it's greenwashing. It's allowing Republicans to talk the talk without walking the walk. What I would like you to respond with is what I mentioned about the study, looking at real changes in American public opinion from 2002 to 2010, and how the number one factor that changed public opinion was elected Republicans speaking out on climate change. So even if they're not walking the walk right now, this is gonna, there's a bit of push-pull. The more they speak out about it, the more the public shifts, the farther out they're able to walk. So we do need to be a little bit of patient, have a little bit of patience. Speaking of which, those votes, which Democrats will be upset about, relate to the Clean Power Plan. Many Democrats won't understand that we're not advocating for the Clean Power Plan and may express some consternation. What I would recommend answering that with is CCL is glad that the Clean Power Plan was introduced. We think it was a great idea, but we think it's a great idea as part of a larger strategy. We think that that is the first step, and then you need a bigger policy, which is a match for the scale of the problem, which is carbon fee and dividend. We see ourselves as part of an ecosystem of advocacy groups. We are filling our niche, which is pushing for that higher rate of emissions reductions. We think the other groups are doing a great job. We're glad they're doing it, but this is a situation where you need a 1-2 punch. We're the right cross. In some parties, in both parties, we'll have difficulty with the level of bipartisanship we're asking for. You as constituents can say, I want you to be this bipartisan. And you will hear many very tired, overworked staffers saying, it's too late this year to do anything. Why are you asking me this? And your answer is, yeah, we know. We got our eyes on 2017. And if we want to be ready for 2017, we need to start laying the groundwork now. So that's why we're bringing this up to you. That's the legislative update. You can write more questions on note cards. I'll start with the ones that I had from the last session. And just like last time, bring those note cards up to Mark. The first one is actually an online question submitted via Twitter. Why would we keep the Clean Power Plan if we have carbon fee and dividend? Great question. We'd keep it because by the EPA's own numbers, we would achieve, if we pass our bill in 2017, we would achieve the Clean Power Plan goals for 2030 by 2021. 2021 is before any state has to even begin complying with the Clean Power Plan. So we can ignore the Clean Power Plan. States wouldn't have to lift a finger. And when we make good on Mark's promise, They won't have to lift a finger, so we can ignore the Clean Power Plan, leave it on the books. If an MOC already wants to join the Climate Solutions Caucus, how can we facilitate that? I would refer to your action logic, where we have the contact for both a Democrat and a Republican in the Climate Solutions Caucus, the aide for Chairman Deutsch and the aide for Chairman Curbelo. And that's how you can facilitate that. And a related question I got a lot was, is it still 2x2? Yes, it's still 2x2. Can we share the goal that to have the legislation passed in 2017? Mark says, obviously, we don't want to. I was going to say, if you want to. I mean, they may think you're crazy, but on the other hand, it might just turn up the fire a little bit. And if you do it with this kind of swagger, they might just believe you. So, for Republican... For Republicans who voted on H Resolution 89, should we bring it up in our meeting or wait for them to bring it up? Bring it up if you want. If that's part of your plan, sure. That's Scalise, yeah. Yeah. And can you speak to the fact that most representatives on the Climate Solutions Caucus voted for HR 89? Yeah, I can. I don't want to get my head chopped off for a marshmallow. I don't think they do either. If they were to vote yes, leadership was pushing hard on this. They were pushing really hard. They wanted this. And I love that because it means they had to fight hard. And that means that we are building political will within the Republican Party, within Congress, to do this if leadership had to push that hard. And ultimately, they voted for it. But if you're putting your head up for a non-binding resolution slash marshmallow, then you know you're putting your head up to get smashed down by a hammer for a marshmallow. They should save their political will. 90% of Congress had already voted for it. It wasn't worth it. What about a Climate Solutions Caucus in the Senate? Sure. I think that the Senate has fewer caucuses just because there are fewer senators. So it's more likely that it would be a working group. Or you can do, my preferred solution, is you take the Graham Amendment, which had 5 senators on the Democratic side, 5 senators on the Republican side, and you turn that into a sense of the Senate, just like the Gibson resolution. And that's what I'd rather have, because then we have a standing resolution, a piece of legislative text which we can refer people to. Unlike an amendment where it's very timely, we can refer them to that and build political will throughout the session. We've already got people working on that. Should we ask MOCs to introduce legislation that returns all revenue to households or net revenue to households, and what is the difference? Ooh. Somebody's been paying attention. So we got an update to our estimate of administrative costs with the dividend delivery study, and it was much higher than we had appreciated previously. We took a real policy, looked at how much it costs, and we reported that. What we failed to account for with our back-of-the-envelope calculations is that all the infrastructure that you would need to do this on a monthly basis. It's one thing to get some overworked employees to do one thing like the stimulus checks, but to get them to do it on a month in and month out, you need a lot. You need to hire them. You need to have buildings to house them, all this stuff. So all revenue to households, I think, is you can make that argument, but when you're looking at our current estimates and the laser talk has been updated, I think that net revenue to households is probably the best thing to say now. And net revenue accounts for those administrative costs. Corporate citizenship. Are corporations going to get a check? No, they're not. They're, it's natural born citizens is the language that the legislative council would put in there. If our MOC is not running for re-election in this year, how do we change our ask? Well, I don't know what your ask is in the first place, but I would say that it's still extremely valuable for them to join one of those groups, because after this Congress, what we're going to be pointing at is look at the number, the absolute number of members, Republican members of Congress who stood up and said, I stand with the Gibson Resolution, I stand with the Bipartisan Climate Solutions Caucus, I'm with the House Working Group, I'm with the Senate Working Group. So if I think that that's valuable. They're not going to check whether or not they were running or not again. How confident are we that the CBO or other org will give it a good review? We're not. We're not that confident. And apparently that varies a lot depending on who's there. It's a risk. It is a risk, but it's a risk we have to take. It's a necessary step. It's what it is. What is the status of the Gibson resolution, and at what point would it be a dead issue? This really gets to the point of, is the Gibson resolution going to pass? I've never cared if it passes. To me, it just doesn't matter. What matters is that they stood up in the first place. It's an organizing tool. For us to point to that language and say, these Republicans stood up, I think is really important. So the status of the Gibson resolution is, it's still a very useful mechanism for inviting Republicans to stand up, to introduce them to other Republicans who are serious about solving this problem, talking to each other and sharing the language which they feel comfortable sharing with their constituents. So still very, very useful. Will creating the dividend make the most popular Congress ever? Did you really even need to ask that? Of course. Okay. Oh, is the dividend for citizens or residents? It is for residents. Our policy uses the biggest definition possible. So it includes people who are undocumented in this country because they're paying the costs, they're living in the climate, they're bearing the damages. So we think that they should... they should be eligible for that dividend. The reality is, we can't be about saving the climate and about fixing immigration. If you were to ask me and say, Danny, I want your honest opinion, I don't think that's going to make it into the final legislation. But I will stand up now on this side of the bargaining table and say this is what we think it should be. How do we respond to a complaint that the administration of carbon fee and dividend grows government? You compare it with EPA regulations. Done. Enough said, really. If you're comparing the administrative costs of our carbon fee and dividend, which will drop to under 2% of annual revenues, I think it's within 6 or 7 years. The Laser Talk has the most accurate number, with the ongoing costs, the costs which have already been spent on complying with the Clean Power Plan, which won't, again, be implemented, which states won't have to comply with, assuming it survives the Supreme Court challenge until after 2022. There's no comparison. The border adjustment requires a calculation of the embodied carbon in exported imported products. Oh, does it? And how will this be done, and how much will it cost? Nobody really knows. We hope we never have to use the border adjustment, bar none. That is the most complicated part of our policy. But I also think that ideally it would require a calculation of the embedded carbon. And again, ideally we would never have to use it. And with 8 out of the 10 largest economies in the world already having some kind of carbon pricing planned or already in place, including our largest trading partners, I think that we probably won't have to have a border adjustment for our biggest trading partners. So I think it's a very realistic thing to say we want to have the border adjustment. I don't think we're going to have to use it. Last question. Is one new light bulb better than two old ones? Now, if you're talking about the lumens produced, probably not. But if you're talking about the wattage, yeah, you're comparing 120 watts to like 1113. So, yeah.
All right, everybody, give Danny a hand. Have a great job. Thank you.